Hey guys, turkey season is in full swing right now, and if you are planning on getting after it, make sure to pick up some Meat Eater Phelps turkey calls to stuff into the old turkey vest or into your fanny pack right now. I carry a few different things. I like to use mouth calls, and I like to use pot calls. Mouth calls or diaphragms, I like them because it gives you hand-free calling, meaning when you're working a bird up close, you can have your gun on your knee, finger on the trigger, ready to roll, and still be making turkey sounds. I like pot calls because I just like pot calls. I enjoy calling with a pot call. Whatever direction you go, including a box call, which I don't personally use too much, but they're fun and great, and I started out with them. Yanni, on the other hand, one of my main turkey hunting buddies, he loves box calls. And what's funny is I'll now and then look to him and give him the look that means get out your box call and find us a turkey. So it's not that I don't like him. I just have Yanni use his. Then I don't have to carry it. Go to Phelps Game Calls. Get calls that are made in the USA and get calls that'll get them close. Find yours at PhelpsGameCalls.com today.
What's up, y'all? I'm KC.
And I'm Tyler, and this is another Big Buck Breakdown from the Element Podcast.
Brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras.
All right, y'all, right off the bat, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Exodus Trail Cameras for supporting us, both in the Big Buck Breakdowns this season and just in general. Man, we are tight with those guys. They are passionate about hunting. They are passionate about making a good product and giving good customer service. And let me tell you something. If you got some Christmas money lying around, maybe you got a gift card or something this Christmas from somebody or some cash, right now, for the whole month of January, they are offering a huge discount on possibly the best cell camera out there, okay? So head to ExodusOutdoorGear.com, put a render cell camera in your cart, and then in the discount code box, type all caps, RENDER35. That's RENDER35, all caps, and you'll get 35% off of a legit cell phone camera. I mean, this is a smoking deal. I don't even know how they're going to do this, but they're making it happen. So go to ExodusOutdoorGear.com and get your render now.
All right, so now on the phone, we've got Jake Hofer from Exodus Trail Cameras, the sponsor of this show, right?
Yeah, thanks for letting us sponsor. Is this the second year running here?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
what's going on, dude? Snow? That's about it?
Not a whole lot. Let's see. It's December 30th right now. We just got like a decent amount of snow here in Illinois, and it's already melting off. Just recouping from being gone from Nebraska and catching up, getting ready for the new year, and just basic end of the year fun stuff.
Yeah. Do you have any deer on trail camera there near home that you're interested in here at the end of the year?
Yeah, there are a couple. This had one actually show up here pretty recently that would be of interest. There's a couple that have disappeared as well that I'm hoping that will show up when if we just get some cold weather that sticks with some snow. One of the farms has plenty of food and typically draws in a lot of deer from pretty far locations. Yeah. So really banking on that. The way it sits right now, last night with that snowstorm, I drove around and looked for deer and just did not have much success, kind of relying on the cell cameras, and hopefully get out and scout if the snow sticks around another day or so.
Well, that sounds good. You know, I got a couple of friends that I can think of that kind of have this whole thing going on I'm going to talk about real quick, and you're one of them. And I think that the friends that I have that have this kind of attribute tend to do like a lot of research on deer and places to hunt and all this and that. But I can think of another friend for sure, and you know, sometimes like when I start asking questions about deer hunting and kind of what you got going on, like a lot of times I'll leave the conversation more confused than when I actually started the conversation. And you know, it's kind of like, you know, I don't feel like that these friends ever lie. I just feel like that they don't disclose things sometimes, you know?
Well, that's that's fair. I take pride in being honest, but there's a fine line of being too transparent, I think, sometimes.
Yeah.
And And the crazy thing of that is, like, I'm sure you guys know with your guys' platform, sometimes just minor details, you know, can make a huge difference on a deer that you're chasing, whether it's someone local listening to it or someone that's like, hey, you guys hunt big deer in Texas. I want to go to Texas and hunt big deer. And they just listen to every episode for clues. So I'm aware of that. This is where I live. This is what I do. And I don't want any additional competition that I don't need.
Yeah. I understand, dude. We completely get it, man. It's a kind of a weird thing. I mean, I know you and I personally have talked about recently, like an instance where, you know, you got called up and, there's been more than one instance, I'm sure, but just the one in particular that, you know, people can surprise you with what they can find out about you these days.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yeah, it was weird after that. That's happened a few times here in even the last couple of weeks, and I'm sure that's just seasonality of things as well. But yeah, I mean, that's cool that people are excited and dive into that. I mean, I would be lying if I've never done something similar. I'm just trying to learn, in general. Like, I'm sure everyone that listens to deer hunting podcasts nonstop have as well.
Yeah. There's people listening right now that are trying to figure out where you're hunting, so they can go kill that
Nebraska
deer that you've got on trail camera. Yeah, Nebraska. That's a home state for you, isn't it?
Yeah. I have dual citizenship now.
That's good. So you actually, you know, may not be joking about that soon, but tell us the story, man. You went to Nebraska recently, and you had called me because I went to Nebraska in September, and I'm sure it's a completely different state, you know, from September to December or mm-hmm. whatever it is. But, you know, tell us how everything went down. I know, I know you want to give me a lot of credit here for what happened. So just go ahead and let us know.
Yeah, I called you.
You know, how important I was in this.
Yeah, I called you and you said, go here on the map. And that's where I went and killed the deer.
I'm pretty sure I told you not to go, didn't I?
Yeah, you're kind of like, man, you know, post-rifle season, a lot of pressure, you know, probably not a high-odds hunt, probably don't have super high expectations, just kind of in general. And I definitely took that to heart, and I was just like, it came down to, it's like, super warm here in Illinois. I had no deer to hunt. I was chomping at the bit to get out and chase something, explore a little new ground, just get some more whitetail experience underneath my belt and just go explore a new area. So that was kind of what it started as, and we were actually going to go to a different part of the state originally, and then just did some additional scouting, actually called some folks through the Exodus kind of pipeline and picked their brain, and then ended up settling in a different part of the state. And so we headed out there, pretty low expectations. I went with the buddy Grant Putnam. And so it's just like any, you guys do a lot of traveling. This is, I'm not a whitetail traveler. I'm a homebody, at heart, but every now and then you want to go check something out. So anyways, we head out there, and I think I bought the tag the 15th, and then so we went on a piece of public that was from a couple people that I certainly trust that said that would be well worth your time. So we went back there and covered about as much as we could in one day. There was some snow there, and there was some tracks, there was some sign, but nothing that really said we need to stay here. So we did see, we saw a group of 8-mule deer that day, a group of 2 bedded, and saw some whitetails as well. So in terms of showing up on a piece of public and walking around and seeing deer, definitely hit that check mark. And then we went to some smaller pieces the next day in the morning, just looking for deer. And we actually saw a doe that was definitely getting chased by 2 bucks. One of them was a really solid deer. And there was a smaller deer in there as well. And so we did what anyone does. We started looking on Onyx on how do we get close to that deer. And what's crazy is there's some tools that you can get basically. This is so hypocritical. There's tools you can get anyone's phone number basically. And we found the number of where that deer was chasing a doe, called them, and they're from Florida, and they were so nice. They're like, no, sorry, like, we put a lot of work in there. Actually, so-and-so is there right now, muzzleloader hunting, and they're like, you know, we hope you find another place to hunt this, that, and the other. And that was the common theme of everyone we talked to in Nebraska. We did not come across one jerk the entire time. So we kept looking around. We found another group of whitetails and asked for permission on that homestead there. got a no. And then we went across the road and actually got permission there. The gentleman was out farming and he's like, yeah, go right ahead. So we had access on probably one of the better primary food sources in the area. And the plan was to hunt that in the morning and the evening. And in Illinois, it's really hard to spot and stalk a deer. And I don't know if it's just because things are so chopped up and you're more paranoid of bumping it to the neighbors, or if it's the lack of terrain features. But this field, the way it was laid out, like we could hunt it in the morning, then going back to bed and hunt it in the evening as well over the primary food source with, you know, just shifting with the wind. So that was the plan, and then explore in the middle of the day. We did see, I'm trying to think here, it's about 2 weeks ago, the first night we actually had a close call with, it could have been the larger buck that we saw chasing a doe, because it was about 2 miles away. And what we learned pretty quickly is those deer cover a ton of ground out there. We had some blundered mule deer stalks that like literally watched the deer run 2 miles away. Ooh, so man. Not too far in the grand scheme of things. But anyways, had a close call right at dark. Tried to close the distance as much as possible. Wind shifted a bit, got caught. You know, they caught our scent, so that didn't work. And then there was a couple days of cold. And then long story short, we saw the same group were like, this is the last cold day. You know, if there's a buck in here, we're going to shoot him. And so, sure enough, they were out feeding there in the morning, and then we put a stalk on them. I think there was a group of six or seven deer, one buck, and then got about, the muzzleloader I was shooting is 0 to 150 yards. And so I cut the distance. It was actually within 150 yards, maybe like 130. I didn't range them, but definitely, you know, field judge under 150. And so shot that deer. And here's a transparent lesson. So when I shot that gun Sunday, four times at 150 yards, all great shots. They weren't on a sled or anything, but they were good shots. I get there, squeeze this shot off, felt good. And it was back quite a bit. It was like 12, 13 inches to the right. And unfortunately this shot was well back further than what I wanted. Couldn't really tell for sure. I mean, you shoot it and the deer runs off. Looks like caught some sort of leg, possibly vitals as well. And so we see this deer run off, bed down, and it's like, let's go back, look at the, because we had footage of it, and like, let's go back, look at it. We don't want to bump them if we did catch the guts or whatever the case may be. And made the idea to go in there, waited just 2 hours, and like, let's go finish them off or see what we can do. It's so open terrain there. The deer ran onto the neighbors. We got their number, called them, and they're like, yeah, go ahead, go recover your deer. And so as we're tracking this deer, we're thinking, okay, he bedded here. We found the bed, and he got up somehow. And it was like kind of a fence line, so either crawled under it or hopped over it. And then we're sitting there, like, going extremely slow, looking, and then we see one coyote run off about 200 yards away. And then I look over to my left in this canyon where kind of anticipated he could have ended up. I just see a ton of birds flying around, and then I'm like, holy cow, that's a coyote. So there's a coyote 200 yards away eating this deer. And Grant's like, shoot the coyote. I was like, no, wait a minute. Like, I don't want to go scare my deer. Like, this could just be a different dead deer. And I'm not kidding you. Yeah. From what we could see from where we're looking, the deer just got absolutely destroyed by these coyotes in like under 2 hours roughly. And then I was like, well, that's the deer. Like, that's the buck. You know, I could see his antlers. And so this coyote is literally just gnawing on this deer 200 yards away. So we spot and stalk the coyote, get 100 yards away, and then I shoot the coyote, and the same thing, drop the coyote, but the shot was off. And then we ended up sighting in that gun again the next day. So somehow in our travels, or whether it was walking around in public, scope got off, but glad it ended the way it was. That's my first out-of-state whitetail, and one of the most wild recoveries I think I'll probably experience ever.
That's crazy, man. So you got some pretty cool pictures, man, and I was surprised. I guess this, I didn't make it clear while I was talking about why I was confused sometimes when you say things, because in our text group with you, me, and KC, we were both confused when you started sending us all these deer pictures that you were actually the guy that, like, shot all these deer. So we thought, like, one of your friends that was with you shot one. But talk about how the story is not over, I guess. You know
right.
what I mean?
So after this, we packed this deer up, and then so then I was like, well, let's clean this gun, and we need to go shoot and see what the heck's going on here. So people are going to think I'm an idiot. I wasn't paying attention. I was talking to Grant, and then I was just using the ramrod and the cleaning cloth, and I put it upside down on accident while just not paying attention. So then this muzzleloader has an internal breech, so it's not like you can just pop it right out and like clean it that way. So this cleaning pad is stuck at the bottom of the barrel with no way to get it out. I had every wrench besides the one I needed to get that loose. And here we are in Nebraska, like middle of nowhere. And it's like, we're in trouble here because we're not like we cannot get this thing out. Like we tried finagling every way that we could. And then once again, people being so nice, we called one. I found a gunsmith just on Google. I call him. He's like, no, you need to talk to this guy. So then we call this other gentleman. And he's like, well, I'm at Walmart with the wife. Head out to my property. I'll be there in 20 minutes. And he was like an hour away. So we drive there. And we drive there. We're sitting there waiting for him to show up. And it's like we were there 2 hours waiting by the time it was all said and done. But while we're sitting there, another rancher pulls up to be there at the gunsmith as well. And like this gunsmith is like, it's a 10 by 20 shed. Like it's so cool. It's like in the middle of nowhere. This guy has no neighbors at all. And so we start talking to this rancher and he's like, yeah, we got, cause Nebraska, you can kill $2 and this tag's relatively cheap when considering an out of state hunt. And so my first tag was notched and I was like, well, heck, we can buy two tags and try to get Grant a mule deer as well. Cause he was more interested in killing a mule deer. He bucked out in Illinois. So that was kind of his route of going out to this trip, and he's a school teacher. So he had a little time off. So I was like, we have time. We're here. Let's see if this guy's of interest to, you know, if we can pay trespass fee or whatever the case may be. And so this gentleman's like, yeah, come on over tomorrow morning. We'll go mule deer hunting. And it's just like a guy that I think it was in between farm projects that was just like, hey, I'll go hunting with these guys. Just loved it as much as we did. And so we got the gun fixed, got the gun zeroed in at his range there. We were good to go. And then we went out, and sure enough, this guy said he had a pretty good herd of mule deer on multiple farms. First farm we roll up to, there was a group of like 80 or 90 mule deer, 2 4x4s in it. It's like, wow. Like, this is why we can't find any on public right now. Like, they're so herded up on some of these pieces of private. So this parcel was so cool, like in terms of how it was laid out, big buttes, just gorgeous, gorgeous property. And they went embedded in a very bad place to be if you were getting hunted. So we were able to work around this mountain. We had the wind in our favor, and we ended up going and like cresting this butte. And there were like 80 or 90 mule deer just bedded in this tight area. There was like $5 in there, 2 4x4s. And so I picked out the one I wanted to shoot, and we just sat and watched him, waiting for him to stand up. He was about 130 yards when he was bedded. And I was like, man, there's no reason to take a shot of him laying down. Like, he's going to stand up. We're going to have plenty of time to, you know, pick a good shot. And so it was about an hour and a half later, he got up and tapped antlers with a younger buck, and then actually worked closer. And then I was just waiting for him to quarter away, because I still with those concerns of prior whitetail shots. Like, I just want a quartering away shot just in case, a little bit more additional room for error. And he ended up quartering away and just blasted him. Perfect shot, right where I was aiming. Heart shot him, ran like 20 yards, actually ran right to us, and dropped right there on the ground. So that was like a fantastic moment. I did not expect to kill my first mule deer, let alone a pretty good one, like in terms of an Illinois kid going out to Nebraska. I was just so excited.
Dude, that's so cool, man. So What are you gonna do, like, as far as taxidermy work goes with those deer?
So I'm gonna do a Euro on the whitetail and tan the coyote, and then I'm gonna go ahead and get a shoulder mount for that mule deer as well.
That's awesome, dude.
I was on the fence of doing a Euro because it's like with whitetails where I'm at, like a lot of times I know these deer pretty well, like usually not a stranger buck, and then it's like that mule deer was really only in my life for, I don't know, a handful of hours, but I want to commemorate that first mule deer, because obviously you only kill your first mule deer once.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome. Did you end up scoring that deer or anything?
Nope, didn't score him. I'm sure I eventually will. I was just so excited. I mean, there was.
Do you know how to score a mule deer?
I assume
because there's
assume
like some H1s and some V1s and Pro V1s.
Does it go
and
up to an H4? That's all that matters. That's H3, H4s. no, I haven't scored it yet. But what was cool, though, is so I was hunting with Grant this entire time, and like he was up to bat to kill that mule deer. And I don't want people to think I'm greedy or anything. I was just like, he had the gun in his hand. I had the camera. I was like, let's go kill this mule deer. Like, we're going to kill him. There's no reason we don't kill this deer. And he hands me back the gun, and he's like, no, I want you to kill your first mule deer. That's more important to me. I was like, holy cow. Like, you know, here we are. This is day five. You took the time out of your life to come out here too. And it's, so he hands me back the gun, and that's why I shot that mule deer. So just kudos to him and how good of a dude he was for that. And so then I was like, well,
yeah.
Like, we're staying until you kill one now. Like, this is not how this trip ends. So we hunted, what was cool, when we were riding around with this rancher and just talking about life and everything else, so he had ag ground, and then he also had this where I killed my mule deer. We went and tried some of these spot and stalks on some of the more flat ag ground, and not as much success, just not enough cover when you have that many mule deer bedded together. So we did not have much success down there. And then I think it was, I think I killed that mule deer actually, I'm getting my days mixed up. I killed him December 19th, I believe. And then we ended up getting the other 4x4 on a similar area. And with that other 4x4, and he was only in a group of five deer that time. And so we spot and stalked him. And then Grant shot a nice mule deer as well. So it's like, for an impromptu, cheap OTC hunt, you could not beat the outcome of this trip.
Right.
First of all, I need you to tell Grant that I've never shot a mule deer either. So, I mean, if he wants to go ahead and keep sharing that love, I'd appreciate it. But really, though, how much experience do you have hunting with a muzzleloader? I know that's kind of a slightly obscure weapon for some people, you know, but there are some decent opportunities in a couple states, including our own home state, of some seasons that otherwise you wouldn't get to hunt. So is that like a new thing for you, or is that like a weapon that you're used to using?
Well, I've hunted deer with muzzleloader here in Illinois. So in Illinois, you have first shotgun season, second shotgun season, and then you have the third weekend. That's just a three-day season is muzzleloader season. And I like to kill deer with a bow, but if I can have a gun in my hands, I probably have a gun in my hand. So anyways, I've hunted with a muzzleloader in the past. My dad actually has a really good setup. It's a Remington 700 Ultra. And so that's an extremely accurate muzzleloader. I know all muzzleloaders aren't created equal. This one's accurate as long as the scope doesn't get bumped. And not too much of a learning curve or anything like that. So I don't know, if you can take a gun out there that accurately shoots 200 yards, 150 yards, obviously your odds just go drastically up, especially on a quick impromptu hunt late in the season too. And it's not like these conditions are really good for anywhere, especially for whitetails. It's like, it was warm and crappy in Illinois, and it's warm and crappy in Nebraska. So let's make the most of it. And if you can have a gun, I'm not too proud. I'll carry one around.
You know, you just said not all muzzleloaders are created equal. And man, I've seen that too. Like, you go to Colorado, and they about near want you to dress like Daniel Boone just to go out in the woods and hunt with a muzzleloader. But like some of these states, you can carry something that's pretty much a normal rifle. You just so happen to load it a little bit differently. So it seems like there's a big discrepancy there. Is Nebraska one of those states that are really strict about that stuff, or what's it like, you know, kind of preparing to go on a muzzleloader hunt there?
From my understanding, it was pretty liberal. This fell into that parameters, but I mean, you're right. There's some that shoot like 500, 600, 700 yards with relatively low effort, and then you have some more affordable ones. And it's tough too. Like, you can buy like a CVA muzzleloader for $150, and that's great. Some of them are great, and then I've heard horror stories of some of those cheaper muzzleloaders too. It's almost just like luck of the draw if you get a good manufactured muzzleloader, because for whatever reason, some of those cheaper ones just aren't as ours are reliable, and I've had cheaper ones, and finally kind of ponied up and have that nicer one, which is super solid.
kind of get what you pay for a lot of times. You probably realize that in the trail camera business, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, it all costs money. The reason why they're more expensive is the components are nicer, manufacturing is better, so it's not just those companies lining their pockets with more money. It costs more to make it.
Yeah. Well, cool, dude, man. I was really, really excited that your trip turned out like that. Because you and I talked about it, I think for maybe even a couple of days, we kind of went back and forth, and mm-hmm. I was like, we talked about how you had a lot to do because it's around the holidays and everything, and I was like, man, honestly, if you got work to do, probably should just get it done. And then you decided to kind of last minute go out there, and it turned out, I mean, probably couldn't ask for a better trip, huh?
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, just so much fun, and that's, I mean, I'll hunt Nebraska again for sure. Just based on how nice the people were, the ability to have plenty of public ground to run around, and also, you know, we realistically got permission on a couple smaller pieces too. So for an impromptu hunt, and just as much as a beautiful terrain and the sense of adventure of it being pretty remote area, especially where I'm from.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, you know, thanks for coming on and doing this, man. Thanks for you guys' support there at Exodus for this series, man, and some of the other things that we've done together, Map Scout Challenge and that kind of thing throughout the last couple of years. Really appreciate that, man, a lot. Congrats on that trip, and I look forward to the end of the season here where you're after, what, a 10-year-old deer?
Or
what
knows? Is he? we're after a couple good old deer that I know will get my heart pumping, so that's all that matters. Certainly excited. And I'll just say this, too. The reason I decided to actually additionally pull the trigger on this trip was I was running cameras in Illinois, and with the weather and the lack of prospects, I was like, well, I'm not going to miss anything here. So that's kind of help go somewhere else. And
dude, that's kind of a common theme in my opinion about deer hunting is you got to spend – a lot of these guys will let you believe that they know exactly where the deer are all the time, and, you know, people think they're awesome. But in reality, most of the time what you need to do is eliminate as much ground as possible, and that's kind of what you did with the cameras there with, you know, just going, well, there's not a lot around here right now. Maybe when I get back, you know, things will change. So
yeah, kept me from poking around for 10 days on those pieces too. just leave them be.
Sure. Yeah, for real, man. That lack of pressure is probably what had that old buck move back in.
It could be. I hope to kill him here in the next 17 days or so.
All right, dude. Well, we'll get you back on when you do. Thanks for doing this, man.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for letting Exodus kind of bring this to everyone's attention. And I love hearing the stories from everybody. They're always fun to catch. Sweet. And it's tough to beat a good hunting story.
Man, what an awesome story about a big buck. Guys, we want to say a big thanks to Exodus Trail Cameras and Cobra Archery for being a part of this Big Buck Breakdown.
For sure, man. And also, if you want to check out what we do on a daily basis, maybe even see some of these big bucks, go to Instagram and follow us at The Element Wild. And then also subscribe on YouTube to keep up with what we're doing throughout the season. And subscribe on the podcast. And remember, this is your element.
Living it.
I'll swim across and meet you on the other side. Cause a lot of frustration. Brothers, let's forgive and forget.
Hey guys, turkey season is in full swing right now, and if you are planning on getting after it, make sure to pick up some Meat Eater Phelps turkey calls to stuff into the old turkey vest or into your fanny pack right now. I carry a few different things. I like to use mouth calls, and I like to use pot calls. Mouth calls or diaphragms, I like them because it gives you hand-free calling, meaning when you're working a bird up close, you can have your gun on your knee, finger on the trigger, ready to roll, and still be making turkey sounds. I like pot calls because I just like pot calls. I enjoy calling with a pot call. Whatever direction you go, including a box call, which I don't personally use too much, but they're fun and great, and I started out with them. Yanni, on the other hand, one of my main turkey hunting buddies, he loves box calls. And what's funny is I'll now and then look to him and give him the look that means get out your box call and find us a turkey. So it's not that I don't like him, I just have Yanni use his. Then I don't have to carry it. Go to Phelps Game Calls. Get calls that are made in the USA and get calls that'll get them close. find yours at phelpsgamecalls.com today.